Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here, Bob
Help!
Well, we kind of missed Moran Monday, didn't we? Oh, well. I have a feeling we'll be able to make up for lost time. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And, of course, that's where you'll find things like access to the chat room, which is free and easy to participate in. And you are always invited to do so. A merry little crew joins in there most every evening during the program. You'll also find there the Listen Live button that will trigger your Windows Media Player if you use that. Otherwise, there are other links for other media platforms. You'll find there the PayPal button that helps us keep all of this going. And our thanks, our very, very profound thanks, go out over the weekend to those who got the early September and kept the early September fundraising moving. That means all we have to raise this evening is the usual $150. We're not in a hole yet, and that's a real bonus. So thank you. Thank you, John. And I will pull up the a couple of the other names. Thank you, Dennis. And make sure that everybody gets recognized. Thank you indeed. A reminder, if you find it simpler to simply contribute and not be bothered with going and pressing the button, there is a subscription function at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, our PayPal functionality, where you can just set it and forget it. And if you'd like to do that, you're more than welcome to use it. It does work. It's functioning nicely. So that's a possibility. You can also contribute via the traditional mail service, United States Postal Service, by sending to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Of course, nobody ever gets a bill for anything that happens here. It happens entirely by virtue of voluntary contributions, with folks understanding that they're not only providing their own ability to receive the program and engage in the conversation as they see fit, but they are doing so for the sake of others who cannot. And that is much appreciated, and it is it's about the most humane model that I can imagine. And, of course, nothing here ever happens by way of exhorting you to buy gold now or Swedish mattresses upon which you can drop bowling balls that can be picked up by vacuum cleaners, after which, after the bowling ball is gone, you can recline upon said Swedish mattress made of NASA foam materials and then lie back and wait for your herbal erection concoction to kick in or your herbal hair remedy to get busy. Yeah, you get the idea. No, there are no bills sent for anything. If you want, the live stream is here where you are listening now, or you can always get the podcast address being easily available at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. It's also available at iTunes. A reminder, the podcast for Dr. Bill O'Brien, who precedes this program on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, is also available under the subdomain at his program at whiterosesociety.org. I highly recommend Dr. Bill's program. If you've never listened in, you have no idea of what you're missing. Today, a magnificent in-depth explanation of the origins of the ideas of self, you know, the ideas behind the notion of self-government. And origins in things like the Massachusetts colony and John Winthrop's City on a Hill speech, religiously couched, and then after a nice explanation, lo and behold, Dr. Bill did it again, and just whack right between the eyes about 5 minutes before, and you're just, what? And you got plenty to think about for another 24 hours until, well, in this case, 22 hours until Dr. Bill comes around again. He will be live at 2 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow, as he has afternoon commitments. This week will be short for me. There will be no program on Friday, as I will by then be hopefully on the ground in magnificent Madison, Wisconsin, to attend the Fighting Bob Fest this weekend there. A tremendous ingathering of good will and good-minded progressive people, hoping to just continue the dialogue that leads to a better America, and in fact a better world, as we watch the debate over whether or not to rain some several millions or hundreds of millions of dollars worth of cruise missiles down upon brown people in Syria. We understand that a better America makes for a better world, because when America does bad things, people in the rest of the world suffer, you know, like a little three-year-old toddler picking her first flower out of the ground as the cruise missile flies in and ends her universe, you know, things like that. So yeah, I'm going to be in Madison this weekend, then travel following in the next week, as I make my first ever foray to the great state of Texas. I'll be talking about mountaintop removal and the AIC Act and the Appalachian apocalypse, Appalachia's agony, if you will, in Waco, and being kindly hosted by the peace group there that is led by our friend Dr. Allen. I can't tell you how excited I am to be going and trying to get that conversation started. So it's going to be a busy couple of weeks, and that makes fundraising all the more imperative. Basically, we would be trying to raise $150 an evening for the next four evenings, but somewhere along the way, we're going to have to pick up Friday's slack, because all of this is predicated on math that I can't comprehend. But somewhere between $100 and $150 is what we have to raise on any given evening, if we look toward being here in the next month. So we got to make that slack up, and then we will have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week, no program. So that's all told, $600 that we're going to have to take care of. So, yeah, Moran Monday, we missed it. But like I said, I don't think we're going to be found wanting for Moran material. And after all, this is Titanic Tuesday, named after the Titanic intellect at work in the right wing. Some of that on display today, as, yes, indeed, we did contemplate whether and if yes, how many and of what form of death and destruction to rain down upon brown people in Syria who have already suffered something on the order of 100,000 deaths in the Syrian civil war. Put that in perspective, there is not a city in West Virginia that has 200,000 people in it, or even 100,000 people in it. There isn't. I don't know, Pittsburgh? Lexington, Kentucky. Find some city that has 100,000 people in it, and then just imagine it isn't there anymore. Or, okay, it's football season. Yes, it is, and I did. I amused myself into nigh unconsciousness on Saturday watching an absolute orgy of college football, and did so at the same time realizing that I was participating even vicariously in something that is at this point in time undeniably vile. I got to work on that. Johnny Manziel, for those of you who follow the game. You out there, Sandra? You want to talk about Johnny Manziel? Yuck! What an asshole. And I use that term advisedly, but really? But I'm not going to go any further. But it is, and Bama, frankly, giving up three sacks to Virginia Tech. I would not want to be that starting offensive line either yesterday, today, or even Sunday, and have old Nick Satan riding my ass. No. I don't know, Marty. Marty wanting to know, who are the Swedish mattress people again? I don't know. But they use a foam that was developed by NASA and then apparently subcontracted out to some company. The Swedish mattress company, let's put it this way, the Swedish mattress company is probably just about as Swedish as Outback Steakhouse is Australian. Right? I mean, the closest to anything actually Australian in Outback Steakhouse is the fact that you can get a frosty mug of Foster's Lager, which incidentally is Union made in Canada, I think by Molson. So that's about how Swedish the Swedish mattresses probably are. But by God, it's mighty restful to lay on one of them while you're listening to your Bose Wave radio that you've had pitched to you during the course of some miserable right-wing radio broadcast. Yeah, one particular right-wing radio broadcaster getting a mention from another right-winger today. This was precious. Too precious to be ignored. John McCain is at this point in time so grumpy that he's going after Laura Ingraham and because this is a twofer, going after Brian Kilmeade of Radio Rwanda. The stupid got too thick even for John McCain, who just he's got some serious foreign policy credentials. I mean, he's a military strategist, he is. Graduated, you don't spend 4 years at the Naval Academy in Annapolis and graduate at the bottom of your effing class, you know, for nothing. Right? Didn't spend 4 years in evil medical school for you to call me Mr. Evil. But no, John McCain, who knows a lot about bombing brown people, even if he wasn't very good at it, knows a lot about ship-launched munitions, even if he personally may very well have been the person who damn near burned down the USS Forrestal. John McCain is not going to brook anybody out there talking foreign policy without running it past him, at least not on the right-wing side of things. As the saying goes, roll that beautiful bean footage.
Fox News alert, you just heard Laura Ingraham, who echoes many Republicans, say Senator John McCain is flip-flopping on his support for President Obama. Senator McCain is here right now. He joins us live from Washington, D.C. Good morning to you, sir.
I'm sorry I didn't hear that section of the program.
She feels as though you're bailing him out, a misguided, confused policy. Now when you come out to the microphones and say, hey, we got to support this, that people can't understand where that came from.
Well, first of all, I didn't say, hey, we got to support this. Second of all, I said I was encouraged when the president commits to increasing our support for the Free Syrian Army, but providing them with the weapons that they need to combat Bashar Assad and to degrade the capabilities of the Syrians to deliver these chemical weapons and other weapons. That cannot be anything but encouraging. But I've said I've got to see the details. I've got to see what's going to happen. And I will not sign on to a resolution that doesn't say that that's going to happen. I'm very worried about just one of these cosmetic kind of resolutions. So I just beg to differ. I'm sure that with her vast knowledge of military tactics and strategy, she knows better than me.
Well, there's an item in the Wall Street Journal today that talks a little bit.
Yeah, that's the charming part. There's a two count there after McCain says her vast knowledge of military strategy, and the two doofuses try to keep things in the... Yeah, one of those kind of Letterman laughs. Yeah, I kill myself sometimes. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. That's precious. John just, you know, you can't... John just wants to bomb somebody. I mean, he wasn't any good at bombing people in Vietnam. He cost us a, you know, I mean, he just, please. He's getting toward the end of his life. He's old. He's cranky. He knows damn good and well. Just ask him. He'll tell you that he should have been the president. Godzilla from Wasilla should have been the vice president, and there should have been missiles just raining, just making it rain all over the world, the brown people he could be slaughtering. And he just wants a chance to launch a little bit of bloody murder on some, you know, brown children. Ha! Ha! Oh, but it gets better. Bomber John was apparently, I don't know, maybe he had a secondary target here. Let's find out.
About how, you know, even though the White House authorized, arming some of the moderate fighters, they're still waiting for a rifle. They're still waiting for bullets and stuff like that.
Or an MRE.
It looks like the plan was, let's look like we're doing something, but let's not do anything. Let's just see how this all plays out. People are dying over there.
Absolutely. And while we dither here and Congress stays out of session, the massacre goes on. I've been so disappointed and angry because, as you know, I've been in Syria. I know the Free Syrian Army. They're brave people, and they're being massacred by arms that are flowing in by air from their sponsor, Iran, and Russia, and it's an unfair fight. They're fighting tanks with AK-47s. Yeah, and so that's why I said I'd like to see what that plan is, and I'd like to see it done. And you are right. Not one single weapon supplied by the United States of America has reached the hands of the Free Syrian Army. And by the way, we know who they are. They are the most effective fighting force, and we can get the weapons to the right people.
Now, Debbie, the Free Syrian Army, the People's Front of Syria, the Syrian People's Front, splitters. But yeah, I mean, you can trust old Bomber John, because like he said, he's been there and actually met with some real live honest to God terrorists and had his photo taken, because it turned out they were terrorists. Oops. But anyway, Bomber John, do continue.
I know you met with General Idris, who is a defector from the Syrian army, who's come out. Some say that he does have tied to Muslim extremists.
Wait, General Idris has come out? I didn't think we'd gotten to the LGBTQ portion of the program yet, but never mind.
I don't know. Well, listen to this video, Senator McCain, of a Syrian fighter jet being shot out of the sky. Listen to what they say afterwards. Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! I have a problem helping those people out if they're screaming that after a hit.
Do you have? Would you have a problem with American Christians saying, "Thank God, thank God"? That's what they're saying. Come on. Of course they are Muslims, but they are moderates, and I guarantee you that.
Of course they're Muslims. I mean, it's not like we're going to invite them to the country club or anything. I mean, they're Muslims, and poor Steve Doofus is sitting there with his mouth hanging open like he's catching flies. I got a problem helping them people that holler that Allahu Akbar business. I mean, that sounds like jihadi talk. I mean, they're Muslims, but, you know, they're moderate Muslims. Oh, F all. But see, and this is a secret. John McCain, Bomber John, is camera crazy. He will go anywhere there is a camera. I mean, if I got one of his staffers to set up a laptop with a webcam in the leading edge of the top part of the, you know how they're set up on a laptop, and the staffer figured out how to set up Skype and everything. And like, I had a request come in from, you know, a contact request that Bomber John would like to make a click. And you know what? We would have John McCain on this program in a second. Because John just wants somebody to care. Attention must be paid. You know? I mean, nobody knows what it's like to be John McCain. And not be loved. I mean, he's a policy genius. I mean, he knows about slaughtering brown people. Just gotta listen.
I've been all over this country. I've been halfway around. I've been traveling so long on much that I haven't got a steady girl. Somebody to love. Somebody to call me Colonel Duff. Somebody to love. Yes, I guess I've been lucky. I had me fortune and fame. But I would give up my roving ways just to change some girlie's name. Somebody to love. Somebody to call me Turtle Dove. Somebody to love. I've been hurting such a long, long time. I've been searching with that girl of mine. Won't you hear me now? If there's somebody listening, won't you answer my plea? Won't you send me some good, good girl to spend her life with me? Somebody to love. Somebody to call me Turtle Dove. Somebody to love. I've been hurting such a long, long time. I've been searching for where's that girl of mine. Won't you hear me now? If there's somebody listening, won't you answer my plea? Won't you send me a good, good girl to spend her life with me? Somebody to love.
Man, the parody almost writes itself, doesn't it? Somebody to bomb. Bomber John and the Blasting Caps. Why not? but old Brian Kilmeade, he don't like that Wahoo Akbar business. No. And of course, Bomber John can't quite get around to the larger theological argument of praising the creator of the universe for allowing you to slay another one of his creatures. Yeah, that's off into the theological swamp into which Bomber John will not go. And into which, well, if Brian Kilmeade or Steve Doozy or whoever this ass is went, you know, their hats would be floating. You know what I mean?
Who's come out. Some say that he does have tie to Muslim extremists. I don't know. Well, listen to this video, Senator McCain, of a Syrian, it looks like a fighter jet being shot out of the sky. Listen to what they say afterwards. Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! I have a problem helping those people out if they're screaming that after a hit.
Would you have a problem with American and Christian saying, thank God, thank God? That's what they're saying. Come on. Of course they are Muslims, but they are moderates. And I guarantee you that they are moderates. I know them and I've been with them. For someone to say Allah Akbar is about as offensive as someone saying, thank God.
General,
wait a minute. I know them. I've been with them. What is he, suddenly T.E. Lawrence? Riding around in the desert in the sheikh's robes on the camel's back. I've been with them. Somebody to bomb.
General Dempsey came out and said, time is not, doesn't matter. We can wait a couple of weeks. It's not going to affect us tactically. Do you agree with
that's
that?
Crazy.
Was he being candid?
Well, he may be candid, but it's crazy. Look at the Israelis. Do you think they give them a week or two warning? And by the way, I understand they struck again maybe today from a distance without endangering any of their people or their aircraft. But, of course, I hate to use the word disgraceful, but to tell the American people that it doesn't matter when we strike while Bashar Assad is moving his military into civilian areas and vice versa and complicating our challenge dramatically is just disgraceful.
So you don't support this tactic then? You don't support waiting on what President Obama's doing?
Of course not. And I didn't think that the president needed to wait. Ronald Reagan invaded Grenada without congressional approval. And the War Powers Act doesn't require it. But the fact is that it's what is happening. And what I'm trying to do is to see if we can't give the resistance whatever they need, which is not a lot, in order to prevail.
Okay.
And remember, this is a regional conflict,
gotcha,
guys.
Senator
Don't forget that. Don't
gotcha.
Forget that.
Senator McCain, thanks so much. Very tense
Thank
time
you.
In Washington. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, very tense time for... Very tense. It's tense, definitely tense. Tense on the driveway. Absolutely tense. You know what? McCain is correct about the War Powers Act. And he's correct about Ronnie Reagan. He invaded Grenada, which even with the passage of time still sounds incredibly stupid. He invaded Grenada. But then again, he also traded arms for hostages without telling the Congress and illegally financed the Contras, who were a bunch of right-wing paramilitary murderous raping bugs in Nicaragua. He did that without telling the Congress, too. And we didn't impeach him because Catherine Graham and Ben Bradley said that America could not stand another constitutional crisis so near in time to that which led to the resignation of Richard Nixon. But that's neither here nor there. Reagan had the powers to do that. George H.W. Bush had the powers to do that. Bill Clinton had the power to do that and used them. And, of course, then there's Dim Leader, who is an entirely separate book altogether in living color. But see, now wait a minute, let's play that old, was it Electric Company or Sesame Street game? One of these things is not like the other, one of these people is not like the others, one of these people does not belong. Let's play that little game. Ronnie Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. One of these people is not like the other. One of these people does not belong. Come on. Who? Right. That one. Yes. The Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist socialist fascist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. He doesn't get to do what the white guys did. Because the fact of the matter is, there would be impeachment proceedings underway had we so much as pointed a flit gun at Syria. So Congress wanted to be consulted. And those of us who still live in that fantasy land of constitutional purism and use the word and do things like use the word democracy to describe the United States. Oh, God, I just kill myself every time I say United States and democracy in the same. Oh, that's just funny. Democracy. Ooh, oh, what a knee slapper. I'll be here all week. Well, I'll be gone Friday. Democracy. United States. Ooh, ooh, tell another one, Vern. I wish it was funny. I laughed until I stopped. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, there would have been impeachment proceedings. Sure enough. As sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you the runs and a bellyache if you eat too many of them, there would have been impeachment proceedings. And, of course, you know, look, I'm anti-war. Make no mistake, I am anti-war. I don't want one. Pass, thanks. And, you know, I see no... Yeah, by the way, the word Munich is now being thrown around. Please. Failure for Congress to act will be on a par with Munich in 1938. Really, I'm not kidding. You've probably already seen the footage. And I'm not going to play it for you. John Kerry himself, in stentorian tones fit to... fit to put an amnesiac down. In fact, an amnesiac water buffalo, even. Described the crisis in terms of Congress's failure to act as being comparable to Munich. Does everything... Oh, dear. Oh, dear. No, really. So... Yeah, lots of frustrating ignorance at work. Jack in Shreveport writing in, subject line, Syria/McCain. Wait a second. Don't people just go to war with the army they have and not the one they'd like to have? Our guys didn't have enough bullets, black jackets, and armor on vehicles. Yeah. But, of course, this is different because the standard to which that one is held is that he should absolutely, our military should be absolutely something on a par with the Praetorian cohort or the phalanxes of Alexander, even though we don't have any Alexander kind of generals, mind you. I mean, my gracious. Look, there are people out there who were crowing over the weekend that President Not Sure had put the Republicans in a box because they were going to have to put up or shut up on his deep-seated desire to let loose some hell and damnation on some brown people, as long as the brown people weren't Bashar al-Assad. In a box. Into the box! But no. It doesn't work that way. And I fully expect that at some point in time there will be a... the real question to me when Barack Obama made his announcement, when President Obama made his announcement, was why did he not also include the line, "I am calling upon Speaker Boehner and Majority Leader Reid to immediately call the Congress back into session," you know, like Monday. So now this, we're going to have a debate about this, and it's going to go on for a few weeks, and eventually we're going to let fly some hell and damnation one way or the other. But we're not going to alleviate the chemical weapons problem. We're just going to bomb some runways or something. Right? Because there are overarching problems here. What do you do? You know, in the wake of the First World War, whose 100th anniversary will come to us all too soon, almost exactly a year from now, which saw the introduction of the horrors of chemical weapons and led to... And the reason I mention this is because we have a reference to the post-First World War generation here in a little bit. But it led to people like Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon and Rupert Brooke and poets and writers from the opposite side of that horrible, horrible conflict. All writing on what a soul-shattering experience that had been, and it gives rise to questions, to fundamental questions of existence, and perhaps even the rise of existentialism. Questions about why we're here, what we're doing. And, you know, I usually, on November 11th, I usually read this poem, Dulce et Decorum Est, by Wilfred Owen. Bent double like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge till on the haunting flares we turned our backs and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots but limped on, bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of tired, outstripped 5-9s that dropped behind. Gas! Gas! Quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time, but someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime, dim through the misty panes and thick green light as under a green sea. I saw him drowning in all my dreams. Before my helpless sight he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. Gas! Gas! Quick, boys! And so that generation that had first experienced that thing, the utilization and introduction of poison gas munitions into warfare, and well, the folks who came behind said, you know, that was pretty nasty stuff. We probably ought not use that anymore. And maybe we should make some rules about anybody who does. And so eventually they did kind of get around to it. And they agreed that anybody who used chemical weapons was going to be deemed to be a real, real world-class prick. And that we would maybe, possibly, do something about it. Yeah. Or not. Unless, you know, we happen to be the ones who were funding the gas attacks. Which we did, you know, us being the United States of America, who, you know, we the people, more perfect union, yada, 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 general welfare, common defense. One of the sillier things said today was that the use of poison gases in Syria is a direct affront to American national security interests, which is nothing if not laughable. I mean, you know, what do we care about a bunch of brown people getting their lungs burned right out of their bodies or their skin fried off of their bones? What do we get? It ain't happening here. Yeah, that was just silly. But the theory was that we would have a world community that would be so incensed at the use of chemical weapons, and then we kind of had to add in the use of atomic weapons, unless it was us that used them, that the world community would condemn it, because among other things, the United States has spent the better part of a generation going all the way back to the godforsaken Coke-founded, funded John Birch Society, hooting along about, you know, get us out of the UN, that we effectively neutralized the ability of the UN to be a force for good, the United Nations. That's one world government's going to bring on the rise of the Antichrist, I tell you, it is. Hand me a swig. So, you know, chemical weapons bad, got to do something. But the thing is, if you're going to punish somebody for the use of chemical weapons, doesn't it kind of go without saying that what you're really saying is that you're going to take the person who ordered the use of the chemical weapons, put them on trial before a tribunal, tried and true, somewhere, and upon a finding of guilt, you're going to stick him in a prison and let him have two hots and a cot for the rest of his natural-born life and give him some time to think about the evil that he did. But we're not going to do that either. And as Sandra is pointing out via a tweet just a moment ago, do you know what kind of authorization for use of military force Obama wants? Ground troops and all kinds of possible new wars, all on only his say-so. Yeah, that's an imperial use of military force. I mean, remember, the authorization for use of military force that Dim Leader got led to all kinds of silly shit. Silly, blood-sodden, stupid, ignorant, murderous crap. And if you're going to have yourself an authorization for use of military force, what the hell's the use in having some little weak-kneed one that won't hardly stand up by itself? I mean, what if you got an authorization for use of military force to go and lob some missiles at some airports in Syria, and then Syria decides to lob something at Israel, and Israel says, well, F all, and lob something, and then Iran, and then Russia, and then, I mean, you know, and you're sitting there with this little pissant authorization to use of military force. I mean, you done struck the match, and now you can't light nothing? This play does not end well. As has been the fashion in recent years, what is the exit strategy? Well, there's not going to be an exit strategy because we're not going to enter. Come on. Really? You want me to run to Harrah's in Reno and take 2-1 on that? Because I wouldn't. Mm-mm. No. No. Bill writing in from Montana. Just curious, Bob, but has John McCain ever been tested for PTSD? If ever there was a person who might be a candidate due to his experiences in the Vietnam thing, I think he should be, although it's probably too late to help him. Full disclosure, I'm a 64-year-old Navy vet, 69 to 75, in the Blue Water Atlantic Fleet. Well, lucky you, Bill. You never served aboard an aircraft with bomber John McCain. Bad things, man. Bad things. Being on a ship with him. Just ask the boys on the forestall. But it is very much a legitimate question. Look, John McCain has never, ever, at any time in his life done anything except sup from the front, from the public trough with both front trotters and back up in it to make sure nobody was getting none of his slop. Marty, with a metaphor with which I'm not entirely comfortable, exit strategy? We all know there's no exit strategy. This is like a roach motel. You go in, you don't get out. Yeah. You know, and I know this is going to seem just a strange comparison, but nonetheless. Ferg and I went yesterday. Oh, it's a 15-mile drive to the nearest laundromat here. And it was a new school week, so that meant that Ferg had laundry to do. So we hied ourselves hence over across the river to the laundromat, and that meant stopping for some laundry doing stuff, you know, detergent, bleach, that kind of thing. Stain treatment. Oh, the stain treatment. Letting that boy wear a white pair of shorts is just an idiot. Because, you know, all males, from 1 to 91, 2 to 92, as the Christmas Carol puts it, are prone to behaving like a 2-year-old from time to time. And, well, you know, me, him, white shirt, white pit, it's just going to get filthy. It's sometimes just by spontaneously rolling in the grass, because that's our nature, grass rollers. But we stopped up to the little local grocery store, and while we were in there, there began to be a flurry of activity, and we got done. We got through the checkout and walked outside, and lo and behold, traffic on the little 2-lane U.S. highway that goes out to the 4-lane that crosses the New River Gorge, which was which way we were going. Traffic was backing up. And what had happened, and it had happened 3 other times before in this county over the course of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, the long Labor Day weekend, was that in this case, a little Pontiac Sunfire with 3 30-somethings in it from across the river had gone howling up this little 2-lane highway in excess of 90 miles per hour, passing vehicles through the passing lane, and then they found themselves having to expedite their passage back into the right proper lane, at which point the driver overcompensated, went up an embankment, spun the automobile in the air, rolled it 6 times until it came to a stop on its top, with one passenger fully ejected from the vehicle and killed, another partially ejected through the rear windshield, and the third simply crushed to death inside the vehicle, still in his seatbelt. 2 dead, 1 grievously injured. The one that was grievously injured was the one who was ejected through the rear windshield, as I understand. On three other occasions, people had died in this very small West Virginia rural county over the weekend. just from traffic so-called accidents, or traffic stupids, perhaps. Because howling up U.S. 60 at 90 miles an hour, trying to live out your own personal hot rod Lincoln, well, it's not good for longevity. But I paused and thought, well, I'm so very glad that I decided to stop and buy my laundry detergent here instead of waiting until I got across the river, because we likely would have been involved in that accident. I mean, it was that near in time. And two, I began to ruminate on how many horrors there are available in just everyday life, not including the kind of life where children experience things like cruise missiles flying at near supersonic speeds through their sky in order to obliterate their mommy and their daddies, even if daddy happens to be a legitimate combatant wearing a uniform. Life is hard enough. Hard enough indeed. And yet we're still having a conversation as to whether or not it's a good idea to go and blow up some brown people for no apparent good reason. The operative question being, is there ever a good reason to blow up some brown people? Or some white people? Or some, just humans. But you know what's really funny? Only it's not. It is highly unlikely that that kind of an inquiry will be made during this very, 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 very important foreign policy debate in the Congress. It's very unlikely. Now, there will be a lot of posturing and blustering about the use of chemical weapons and how we can't wait and we gotta go now, damn it, now. Go, 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 go. But I'm almost willing to bet there will be nobody to speak up for the babies who are still alive, but once we're done, won't be. See, I remember long about Halloween of 2004, when that Johns Hopkins study came out that showed that there were something approaching a million statistical excess deaths in Iraq since George W. Bush had started his little war of choice.
He tried to kill my daddy. Daddy, hey, what do you think now? Yeah, who's got the bigger pecker now, huh, old man? Huh?
Those speaking up, and don't let anybody con you, having a hissy about the use of chemical weapons is not speaking up for the innocents. And just while I'm at it, because I'm this way, there were 100,000 dead in this civil war before the chemical weapons were ever used. 100,000 dead from just boring stuff like bullets and bombs and tanks and mortars and rockets. 100,000. And a whole boatload of those were women and children. Old men. Non-combatants. That neither side seemed to have much compunction against killing conventionally. Oh, but by God, those chemical weapons came in, and suddenly we were very, very, very concerned about the Syrian civil war. maybe it's because when the chemical weapons get used, it winds up being embarrassing for us, because 9 times out of 10, somebody on our side, you know, the people who clip coupons and read the and read the Dow closings every day as if they're looking at tea leaves or goat entrails, might be a little embarrassed to find, oh, shit. Well, it was good for business. I mean, it turns out in the UK, two firms were granted licenses to sell the components of chemical weapons to Syria, and the license was only revoked this past January? Well, I say, old shoe, it was good for business. Our quarterly stock, our quarterly profit and loss statement was dramatically better than anything that the Standard & Poor's had actually expected of us. And it's all because we were able to sell those toxic agents to those wogs in Syria. Business. It's a bit of a bloody thing, isn't it? So there's all of that to discuss this evening. Hey, and big thanks going out to Jay Cruzen and to Karen. Karen with a note. Nice singing, Bob. Iran-Contra is just one example of America acting as state sponsor of terrorism. The Contras were terrorists, plain and simple, and St. Ronald gave them money. Yeah, just like when we called in the satellite targeting information to the Iraqis, knowing that they would use the chemical weapons that we had sold them. Well, somewhere, I don't know, Donald Rumsfeld got another skin tag or whatever happens, whatever the devil gives him every time he makes somebody else get all dead. But it was good for business. And we are at $125 for our goal this evening, with a note in, and that's between Kate, Karen, and Jay Cruz, and thank you. Note from Kate, subject line, it's time again. Come on, folks. It's the first of the month again. Lots of you have your Social Security money in the account. How about putting a little bit of it in the kitty so we can stay ahead of the curve for the month of September? I've contacted my Congress critters, letting them know that I am among the over 75% of the population who opposes this mess. I asked all of them, haven't we already killed enough brown people? Ho-hum, here we go again, another mess we've gotten into, like a slow-moving train coming at us. The best we can do, in my opinion, is to hang on to what sanity we have around us in the form of those who love us and whom we love. You're right, Bob. There are horrors all around us. Peace be upon all. So we're $25 short of making the goal for this evening, and if we can do that, maybe we can start working on Fridays and take a chunk out of that during tonight and tomorrow and Thursday. So thanks very much to Kate, to Karen, and to Jay Cruzen. It means an absolute ton. But I don't want Syria to just dominate the conversation. It's kind of, well, it is rather an elephant in the room, isn't it? So there are other topics out there, and some of it is even gratifying in one instance, deliciously stupid in another, bloodthirsty. Don't forget bloodthirsty. I bet you can guess which quarter that's coming from. Hey, I wanted to call your attention to something. There is a project out there, and you can find it at zenedproject.org. There's a project afoot, And it's called the Zen Education Project is titled Teaching a People's History. Now, we know, for instance, that out in Talibandiana, Mitch Daniels, was working hand over fist and hammer and tongs to make sure that nobody in Talibandiana ever heard the name of Howard Zinn. This post is a little, about a month and a half, a month and a few days old. But it's worth mentioning. I just learned about it today through a friend of mine inside the struggle to end mountaintop removal. Wanted textbook detectives to look for coal. And a lot of you have kids or grandkids, and you know what? It would do you good to actually look through the textbooks that they're bringing home from school, because remember, most of those textbooks will have been influenced by Texas. There's a reason Texas and textbook both begin with Tex. You might be surprised at the crazy crap you find in there. For instance, we know that in a lot of in some textbooks, there are these goofy references to coal and how good it is. So this post says, "We need your help." The Zen Education Project has teamed up with Eric Grunbaum, one of the producers of the excellent film on the fight against mountaintop removal coal mining, The Lost Mountain, Last Mountain, in which I'm in for 2.7 seconds, to research and expose the treatment of coal in textbooks. Coal still supplies 40% of our electricity. No, it doesn't. It's below 30. It's below 40% now. It's more like 34, 37. And is the leading cause of climate change, not to mention massive health costs like hundreds of thousands of mercury poisonings, pulmonary diseases, and tens of thousands of premature deaths each year. No mention of the birth defects. Oh, well, we're so forgettable, we Appalachians. But in our initial research, we found that coal is either virtually invisible in the curriculum or is lied about. Oh, dear, there's a link. There's a link to lied about. I have a feeling there may be screaming involved. From a website called Rethinking Schools, Scholastic Inc. Pushing Coal. A fourth grade curriculum lies through omission. Basically, it's a story about how the coal industry has bought off, has bought some propaganda time with Scholastic Inc. But anyway. Eric Grunbaum, continues to work on coal issues and is now developing a traveling science exhibition, The Rock That Changed the World, for science and natural history centers. Rethinking Schools and the Zen Education Project intend more educational articles on coal. So what they're asking people to do is, in every state, at every grade level, to look in textbooks, both social studies and science, maybe history, Kentucky, West Virginia, history, Tennessee, Alabama, history, Montana, Wyoming, history. Anyway, and email text or images of the selections on coal. They say, look coal up in the index and then send us whatever the textbook has to say. Scans or in-focus pics should do it. That in-focus part, that's really important. And so you can find out all about this at zinedproject.org. Z-I-N-N. edproject.org. And here's the sad and sorry part of it all. I'll bet you that this is the only program where you're going to hear about this little project. So, if you don't mind, when the kiddies bring home the school books, and I don't care where you are, because the coal industry is pervasive, it has tentacles into everything. You think because maybe you're in Oregon, there won't be some coal propaganda in your child's life? Think again. California, same. You think the social studies book is just going to be about lobsters in Maine? Have a second look. And then you can email the results to rockthatchangedtheworld@gmail.com. rockthatchangedtheworld@gmail.com. Eric Grunbaum and his team are going to pull together all the responses and then share them with the Zen Education Project. and then people will be better informed and able to combat such ignorance and direct misinformation. Okay? So it is about 6 minutes past the hour. Here endeth the initial Titanic Tuesday filibuster. We'll take a little break. It is Tuesday, and that means we've got the Green News Report on the way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to that. And I'm also happy to announce that we have reached that $150 threshold this evening. Thank you very kindly, Jack. And thank you all who helped out over the weekend and took care of Monday, even though there was no Monday show. It's all calculated upon a five-day week. And thank you to Randy. He says, sorry for the... Randy is usually the first one at the first of the month. He said, sorry for the late-in contribution. A little donor fatigue, I guess. I understand. Believe me, I do. So Randy has just taken out... Randy's just taken out $50 of Friday's $150, so maybe we can get this taken care of. Thank you all. Thank you all very kindly. And we'll take a break. You know, your calls are welcome either on the traditional phone lines or on the Skype line. On the regular line, 304-658-3333, and on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either one works just great. And let's take that break and come back to some other stories, some other issues. This is Conversation Radio. Radio like nothing else.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world to the tongue. Serve your own needs, beat it up and not speak, grunt, no strength, the ladder starts to clatter with fear, fight down, high wire and a fire, representing seven gangs in the government for hire at a combat site, left the weapon coming in a hurry with the fury breathing down your neck, keep my team reporters, battle Trump, jet the crop, look at that, no plane, fine, then, uh-oh, overflow, population, common food, what it'll do, save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve your own needs, listen to your heart, please.
See? we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
It's Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013.
We've drawn up a basic plan to achieve a fundamental solution to the problem of radioactive water.
Japanese government takes over Fukushima as radiation levels spike.
The Pacific Islands have experienced both historic droughts and the highest rates of sea level rise in the world.
Pacific Island nations beg the UN to act on climate. Plus, hitting the brakes, Americans are driving less than ever.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
My friends, the science is clear. It is irrefutable, and it is alarming. If we continue down our current path, the impacts of climate change will only get worse.
Well, that tears it, Secretary of State John Kerry. Let's bomb global warming. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm convinced. John Kerry has convinced me.
Well, you know, actually, there is some analysis that shows that climate change causing drought is also part of the impetus behind the unrest in the Middle East.
See, isn't that just like you? Everything comes back to global warming, doesn't it?
Guess what? Everything does.
All right. What else do you have for us today?
Well, in Japan, the Japanese government announced Monday it will take charge of the situation at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant with new funding of nearly $500 million to contain recent leaks of radioactive wastewater and build new water decontamination systems.
Does that mean that they have not been in charge this whole time? That it's been TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, that's been running the entire thing?
That's right. They've been guiding and suggesting, but not running it. This comes after new revelations showing radiation levels near leaking wastewater storage tanks are actually 18 times higher than previously thought. Turns out gauges used by TEPCO, the plant owner, can only read measurements up to 100 millisieverts an hour. But new, more sensitive gauges go higher than 100 and show radiation levels near the leaky tanks are actually 1,800, enough to kill within 5 hours.
Wait a minute. You're saying these gauges have been reading 100 for all of these years, and that was because that's as high as the gauges go?
That's right.
They get new gauges, and it shows 18 times the amount of radiation that they thought and that they were reporting to the public this entire time.
That's right.
Amazing.
The government's takeover, 2 years after the fact, is widely seen as an attempt to shore up Japan's bid to host the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo. That is to be announced on Saturday.
And conversely, can it be said this entire time that Japan has been downplaying the concerns because they were hoping to get the Olympics in 2020. The last thing they need to be talking about is a couple of unstable nuclear reactors.
One could say that.
Wow.
Here in the U.S., something you don't want to hear if you live near a nuclear power plant.
Wait, I'm leaving?
All 107 nuclear reactors in the U.S. are vulnerable to terrorist attack, according to a new study. In fact, last month, one plant, the Beaver Valley Nuclear Power Plant in Pennsylvania, failed a crucial component of the federal safety drill that simulates a mock terrorist assault on the plant.
Okay, I'm back. What did I miss?
Oh, nothing.
Oh, good.
Without strong and immediate action, we can all expect new threats to critical infrastructure, regional stability, public health, economic vitality, and in some cases, even long-term viability of states.
Wait, that was Secretary of State John Kerry. He was talking about Syria, right?
No, he was not. He was talking to the Pacific Island Forum, 15 Pacific Islands states that are threatened by high sea levels.
Does he just make the same speech for every crisis?
You could say that. The 15 nations of the Pacific Island Forum have issued the Majuro Declaration, a new resolution signed on Tuesday, to push the United Nations on the urgency of climate impacts that are already hurting their nations, and asking the UN to move swiftly to get a binding international agreement to reduce the carbon emissions that are causing global warming and the rising sea levels that have already swallowed up parts of the Marshall Islands and other low-lying countries.
Wait, if global warming is a hoax, how has the ocean swallowed up these islands?
Because global warming is not a hoax.
Says you.
Meanwhile, a new report blames federal funding cuts related to the sequester as partly to blame for the spread of the Yosemite Rim fire. Al Jazeera America reports that across-the-board budget cuts forced the U.S. Forest Service to abandon fire prevention projects in vulnerable areas because they weren't funded by Congress. At least eight of those projects are in areas that were destroyed by the Rim fire, but good news, it's now 75% contained. Finally, Americans are driving less. A new survey from the U.S. Public Interest Research Group found that since 2007, the number of vehicle miles driven in the U.S. has steadily gone down in nearly every state. But they're not sure why. They don't think it's the recession. They don't think it's urban density. It does seem to be driven, pun intended, by millennials, the young adults under the age of 30 who just happen to have much lower rates of driving.
That's right. Us millennials drive a lot less.
Yeah, who you saying, millennial?
We're much more on the millennial than all of the other stories we couldn't get to today. Please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes or Stitcher or your TuneIn app, millennials. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Socrates!
Yeah. Hour number two of this Titanic Tuesday edition of the Horn. Thanks. I wanted to make sure. I like to make sure that I recognize everybody who helps keep all of this going. Thanks to Kenneth over the weekend, and thanks to John. John sent a note along, and he said, "I tried to send the Horn $100 via PayPal in July. Then I noticed that the transaction had been reversed and showed up as a credit in my account. I don't know what happened, but you and I both know that one of the great immutable truths in life is there is no free lunch." I did that because John then said, "I'm trying to simulate your echo effect. Accordingly, I'm going to attempt to send you twice the amount I tried to send before." And that is how that is how John came to contribute over the weekend. And Kenneth kicked in, and Dennis kicked in, and we got the month off to a pretty good start if we can just keep up with it. So thank you all very, very much. Okay, Marty. Now we've got battling movie lines. Marty, I prefer Proximo from Gladiator. We are but shadows and dust. And then. Proximo, wasn't that the guy that was played by the hard-living, hard-drinking English actor who died on the set and forced the film to be basically reshot? Reed. His name was Reed. Oliver Reed. Took me a minute, but yeah, there we are. Okay, now we've had an ancient Roman reference, and that works nicely with segueing into this little moment. This is one of those laughable moments. And no, this is not about what the subject matter appears to be about. I give credit to Charlie Pierce over at his amazing blog at Esquire.com for pointing this out earlier in the day. It's an essay for the National Review by a guy by the name of Victor Davis Hanson, who is given credibility in some circles with being a really smart person, when in fact Victor Davis Hanson proves that even those who have been well educated can often prove to, well, not do much with it. Victor Davis Hanson, for those who may be interested, is a right-wing alleged Democrat. He is said to be a registered member of the Democratic Party, but he was one of the biggest cheerleaders for the slaughter of the people of Iraq and Afghanistan. In supporting the attack on the people of Iraq, he said, "I came to support neocon approaches, first in the wars against the Taliban and Saddam, largely because I saw little alternative. The Democratic Party reminds me of the Republicans circa 1965 or so, impotent, shrill, no ideas, conspiratorial, reactive, out of touch with most Americans, isolationist, and full of embarrassing spokesmen." You know, you gotta be careful what you say. Because when it comes to embarrassing spokesmen, this guy just bought controlling interest in the Embarrassing Spokesman Corporation of America. Because, among other things, by the way, he believed that the Iraq War was a good and worthwhile undertaking and was, on the whole, a laudable success. This is a position that is easily held if you did not have to go to Iraq and get shot at or IED'd in the midst of all that success. And it goes, he's wrong about everything. But dangerously, this guy is a classicist. I mean, Greek and Roman, you know, the classics, yada, yada, yada. Some of the stuff that we talk about here, although I do not hold myself out as any kind of a scholar, I just happen to have enough exposure to maybe draw a little line, dotted line from here to there from time to time. And so in something that I think would probably prove harrowing to our buddy Dr. John, this guy wrote a book called Carnage and Culture in 2001. Also published in other countries as Why the West Has Won. And he made the argument that beginning with the ancient Greeks, the dominance of Western civilization has been driven at the point of a civilizing Western spear, or muzzle of a civilizing Western gun. And it's just a sort of academic mess. But he ran off. Maybe there was some cheap hooch involved. But as noted today over at National Review Online, he's got an essay about. And please, just because I say the word doesn't mean that that's what this is all about. I'm going to read this. This is a reader because it just displays the get off my lawn, screaming at clouds constituency within the United States with whom we have to deal because they are invariably treated as very intelligent persons. They're also discussed periodically as being very responsible, or perhaps level-headed. Yeah. The title of this is Miley Cyrus and Ugly Sex. Oh, please. And as I read over this earlier today, I didn't know if I was going to be reading this in my grumpy old man voice or in the having my chest hair tugged at by my gold chains while talking with my teeth clenched voice. Oh, Muffy, this Pinot Noir is absolutely abominable. It is hardly possible anymore to get a decent glass of wine around here now that all the hoi polloi are drinking it. You know, that hoi polloi comes to us from the ancient Greek, and thank God for me that I can tell people that because I have a classical education and can write books about how we can thank Alexander for the fact that we have cell phones. Jesus. So I think that voice won. An older generation used to call the boredom of bad habits reaching rock bottom. The present variant. I mean, and this guy, if you go and you look up his wiki, his credentials are burnished by the fact that his father and uncle played football for Amos Alonzo Stagg, which, I don't, you know, are head injuries genetically transferable? I don't know. An older generation used to call the boredom of bad habits reaching rock bottom. The present variant, perhaps, is jumping the shark. That moment when the tiresome gimmicks no longer work and the show is over. On the other hand, I think now, after this article, we can talk about jumping the Hanson. And I'm not talking about the Hansons that sang that catchy little bee-doo-wop song few years back, which may turn out to be 20 because they're all beginning to run together for me now. In a moral sense, I just love having moral sense as defined by right-wingers hiding behind a Democratic Party registration, don't you? In a moral sense, Miley Cyrus reached that tipping point for America, slapping us into admitting that most of our popular icons are crass, talentless bores, and that her own tastes, which created them, lead nowhere but to oblivion. After all, what does an affluent and leisured culture do when it has nothing much to rebel against? That was poor Miss Cyrus's recent dilemma at the MTV Awards ceremony. What could we call this? Stick-up-the-ass theater? It was poor Miss Cyrus's recent dilemma at the MCV Awards ceremony. There are no real rules about popular dance anymore. No steps, no moves borrowed from the ballet, not even a few adaptations from scripted square dancing. It is all free-form wiggling and gyrating, twerking, as if to shout out, "Who are you to say that fake screwing in a vinyl bikini is not dance?" I hope you're laughing, because I'm working my ass off to keep a straight face. The same is true of music and lyrics. Can we back up to the dance thing for a minute? Just because listen, where television is concerned, I'm still grieving the end of Gunsmoke, okay? I still haven't seen the end of that James Gandolfini vehicle. And what the fuck Bobby was doing in the shower at the end of Dallas, I'll never know. Although I was kind of fond of the end of the Newhart show, where he woke up next to Suzanne Plachette and told her that she needed to wear more sweaters. That was cute. See what we're talking about? I'm all fogied up on this, but I'm not... Oh, well, the culture is going to hell. Eff it, you might as well put a straw in my Chardonnay. God damn it. Right? But I am. I'm a day late and a dollar short. I happened to cross something over the weekend, and I was absolutely enchanted by it. I was perusing the New York Times at some point, and I saw this thing about a TV show that had just put up its final its final farewell video because they'd been canceled after one season. And it was a little rainy one day, and all right, I'm going to watch this, and it just turned out to be available on a certain video download. So I watched the single season of a little show called Bunheads. Laugh if you must. But I did. And the dialogue was sparkling and witty and sharp and quick, and it was all wrapped around, you know, classical arts, you know, dance. And it was a joy to watch and a real pleasure, and I'm thinking, I'll be damned. I mean, the reason I went, because the critics were uniformly deeply impressed by this program. And nobody was getting shot. And there weren't any meth deals going on. And there was no magic or leprechauns or anything. Vampires or magicians or wizards. It was just a straight-up, charming little tale with some coming-of-age stuff and some getting-older stuff and some already old and wondering, just and quirky and lots of literary references, and I just liked it. So I can only assume that Mr. Hansen here, Victor Davis Hansen, oh Jesus, he's a Davis, that explains everything. I'm related to some Davises, we're rule-oriented. So, yeah, there are no real rules about popular dance anymore, which came as a real surprise because there's a little dance studio in this show, and demi-plié, and plié, and relevé, and way, way, way back in the long and distant past, I had a cup of coffee in a dance studio one time because I was a little theater junkie who gave up on theater because he decided he was not a very good waiter because I'm rather clumsy, which made me a not very good dancer too, I might add. There are no real rules about popular dance anymore. No set steps. Can you just hear the white privilege that just kind of burbles through all of this? No moves borrowed from the ballet. Not even a few adaptations from scripted square dancing. Oh, thanks for the snide hillbilly reference, you pompous dick. The same is true of music and lyrics. You can talk to a drum beat and call it music. You can hit the same chord ad infinitum and call it music. You can scream almost anything and call it music. Doggerel becomes lyrics. Half notes, full rests, rhyme, meter, all that is irrelevant to the degree it is even still remembered. That is why we often see our performers just stop singing for a few moments in a daze. The dead beat goes on without their constant, mindless input. And every spring, the toilets explode. No, I added that part. In the first part of the 20th century... See, I told you I was going to get back around to this. Remember? Dulce et decorum est... Right, Wilfred Owen? Right, see? I don't just do things here. In the first part of the 20th century, modernist contrarians established a counter-music, an antithesis to classical genres. Populist dancers announced, who needs ballroom formality? But again, how do you oppose that opposition without a reactionary full-circle return to formalism? Can't you just see him over at the National... Hey, boss, this here smells... this guy uses a lot of them damn $10 words. We're gonna sound real smart. I mean, he's talking about the formalism. The advisors of Miley Cyrus should have a problem in that the
20-year-old ignoramus is not a Paris showgirl in the Folie Trévis of the 1870s, not an impressionist artist in 1890, not a Ziegfeld girl circa 1910. And with every one of these references, he sounds like he was effing 90 when they were doing it. Not a Ziegfeld girl circa 1910, not a poet of the Great War, not a depression. And yet, the poets of the Great War, like Wilfred Owen, who wrote things like Dulce et Decorum Est, which were a general sort of blanket condemnation of, you know, war. So he references them, but he doesn't really understand them, because in 2003, he was all for going and, you know, blasting the bejesus out of some brown people. Not a Depression-era novelist, and most surely not a blues singer in the 1940s. Oh, dear, this is going to drive poor... This is probably driving poor Bill, Mr. Stress in Cleveland, right around the bend. They're not any of these things, all defiant in arguing that in turbulent times, genres, rules, protocols in the arts, literature and popular expression were confining, hypocritical, and fossilized. And then parentheses. Oh, there's got to be something good if there's coming if there's a parenthesis. As if it is more difficult and challenging to write a poem without iambic pentameter, rhyme, or poetic diction. Or maybe because the real artists of the era realized that trying to shoehorn an idea into an artificially created form and format somehow cheapened and cheated the idea of its weight and gravitas. I mean, this is, for me, maybe not you, but for me, this is furniture kicking stuff. I mean, this is a jackass wandering around the mansion screaming, "Oh, my daughters, oh, my ducats." This, he's just taken down Robert Frost, Carl Sandburg, E.E. Cummings. As if it is more difficult and challenging. Gary Snyder. To write a poem without iambic pentameter, rhyme, or poetic diction. Miley Cyrus. To the extent she is intent on anything other than making more money and headlines. Seemed to be trying to rebel against the rebellion. Most likely Madonna and her own knockoff insurgent, Lady Gaga. But given that both of them have appeared on stage 9/10 nude, he was measuring, routinely simulated sex in front of millions, and adopted... Where was the Michael Jackson crotch-grabbing reference here? I mean, really? Misogyny much? Hanson? Routinely simulated sex in front of millions and adopted symbols and sets designed to gross out Middle America. How do you go beyond their uncouthness? Higher platform shoes? More videos of public nudity? Two foam fingers? For going beyond, not singing more mellifluously, dancing more adroitly, or energizing the crowd more enthusiastically, is now the point. In Petronius Arbiter's first century novel, The Satyricon, the fatter and more repugnant is Trimalchio, and the more loudly he passes wind, burps, mangles mythology, and invokes scatology, the more he thinks that he appeals to his bored dinner guests. In terms of repugnance, Miley Cyrus was the anorexic and mobile version of Jabba the Hutt.
She has neither the training nor the discipline to go formal retro. She surely, and don't call me Shirley Hansen, she surely was not going to appear in her vinyl bikini, put on ballet shoes, and do a bit from Swan Lake. Now that would be shocking. I made it funny. Nor was she going to offer O Mio Babino Caro from Puccini's opera Giannichichi, waving her huge foam finger in Mitch Miller's sing-along fashion. That, too, these days, would be shocking. So what is a poor multimillionaire celebrity to do in the age of Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan? Really? Get out of the vault much, Hanson? Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton? I can't even get a Kardashian here? And I thought I was the one that was living in a cultural vacuum. Just a bubble. So what is a poor multimillionaire celebrity do in the age of Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan when slumming has become passé and the audience has become post-decadent? Just say, and you idiots are paying for this? There are no large cultural stimuli to force Cyrus the Younger. Ho ho! Another witticism on my part. Oh, I can't help myself. I'll be here till the Ides of September. There are no large cultural stimuli to force Cyrus the Younger to question society's classical norms. No struggle to win the vote for women and then blacks. No Verdun with a million dead in the muck. No Great Depression with rampant starvation. You know, if I was the editor, I would have had him cut this paragraph. Because, you know, that makes it sound like, you know, it would be okay what she did at the VMAs if only we'd had a million recently dead. You know, if she'd done it on, like, September the 12th, 2001, that would have been good show business. Instead, we live in a psychodramatic age of virtual oppression and feigned want, in which letter from jail is updated with Oprah's melodramatic account of being denied a closer look at a $38,000 Swiss handbag. Oh, Jesus, really? Really? This is the penultimate paragraph. Oh, penultimate, you used penultimate. Good God, man, did you... A psychodramatic age of virtual oppression and feigned want. Now, this is that the psychodramatic age of which this pious, pompous old prick to which he refers is that psychodramatic age in which one in four American households will experience real, grievous, gut-rumbling hunger in their lifetimes. That psychodramatic age to which this braying ass refers is that psychodramatic age the United States can afford $100 million worth of cruise missiles to drop on even poorer brown people in Syria, but can't afford to maintain its Head Start program. Oh, what a dick! And really? Who? Who? Did I miss it? Isaac? Sandra? Little help here? Did somebody update letter from Birmingham jail to include Oprah not getting a closer look at a third? I mean, I know the Oprah story, the Swiss with the handbag and the... I know that, but did anybody out there update the letter from Birmingham jail with that? Or is he just making shit up? Our version of D-Day is the question whether or not to lob a few cruise missiles at Assad. To make Obama's red lines red. Soup kitchens and 5-cent apples.
apples have transmogrified into electronic EBT cards and Obama phones. Oh, shit, not that again. I'm sorry, I'm swearing like a sailor on Liberty, but I can't help it. This stuff just makes me crazy. I mean, this is just floating on the slimy, scummy surface of a burbling swamp of stupid. Again with the cards? Is that what it is?
Oh, I got constituents can't buy them there Lasker King crab legs what catch on the deadliest catch, but them people with the EBT cards they can. And my constituencies ain't eating nothing but hamburger. And them welfare people whip out that EBT card and they eat all the crab legs they want every month. And my constituents say, Louie, I wonder when I'm going to get some.
And Obama phones. Never mind the fact that the low-cost, federally subsidized access to telephones program has been in existence for several presidencies. Didn't even start with Bill Clinton. I don't even think it started with George H.W. Bush. Our version of D-Day is the question whether or not to lob a few cruise missiles at Bashar Assad to make Obama's red lines red. Soup kitchens and 5-cent apples are transmogrified into electronic EBT cards and Obama phones. Where is the elemental inspiration, the existential need to tap popular anguish and turn it into revolutionary artistic expression? He should have stopped there. But he didn't. The little white privilege monster, just like the thing in the belly of the guy in Alien, just comes right out, and we get this to close this monumental piece of hackery. If multimillionaire rapper Jay-Z performs at the White House, where is to be found aunt of resistance? Oh, wait, I missed it. There is another page. In short, resistance to what? I'm afraid to ask. In Shock Jock Miley's defense, it wasn't the penultimate paragraph after all. Reading comprehension. Bad, Bob, bad. In Shock Jock Miley's defense, she did win our attention to get top ratings. How so? You know, they sell blowguns. I can't go on with this. Because there's a whole nother page. I can't go, but blowgun, and you just, and I think they make Thorazine darts, or at the least Aricept. In Shock Jock Miley's defense, she did win our attention and get top ratings. How so? Ostensibly, she brilliantly pawned her former Disney images, sweet, wholesome Hannah Montana, for a grotesque postmodern Grendel's mother. I can just imagine the little knuckle-walking right-wing readers of the National Review online scrabble through the Grendel! Wasn't that Hansel's sister? Yet still replete with a whiff of teenage tennies and stuffed teddy bears. Is that your kink, Hansen? Is that what you noticed? Did you watch this thing naked with a bag of Cheetos in one hand? Madonna tried...
that disconnect with her anti-Christian shtick, which supposedly bounced off her Italian Catholic roots. But by the time the public had seen her genitalia, they had no idea of and did not care about what she had once been. But Miley, imagine... No, really, Hanson, I don't want to imagine, but... Well, y'all are free. But Miley, imagine Shirley Temple doing a pre-deep throat or Haley Mills stripped down to vinyl underwear. This guy's worse than the asshole in Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, the guy that you yell, "Where's your effing neck at?" A note coming in from Danny in Louisiana Stan. First, which of these email addies should I use, or is it on air? Always, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Just bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's the easiest one of all. Second, damn it, Bob. As I mentioned, love your show, and so glad I found you, The Horn. By the way, is Horn an acronym? Yes, Head On Radio Network. I don't know. Now you do. And the host after you with the Virtual Institute. Actually, Bill's before me. Rick Smith is after me. But, yeah, he says, you're ruining my life. If I'm not doing the things I should, my earphones are ever-present as I listen all the time to rebroadcast as frequently as I can't find a clear three-hour block. Oh. My husband is starting to think I'm committing auditory cheating. I would, too, if he was listening to someone at 3 o'clock in the morning all the time. This voice is one of your best, but it reminds me of the pretense to which William F. Buckley aspired. Never thought I'd say this, but Buckley seems like a hippie compared to the lunatics that have taken over his party. I said, oh, shit, the exact same time you did over the Obama phone. Oh, thank you. Validation! Fritz in Arkansas. Subject line, that Welk fanboy you're reading. Welk? Someone get that columnist into a room with a 30-year-old RCA TV and a wall full of VHS tapes of Lawrence Welk, preferably ones made without that champagne girl Welk fired for showing too much thigh. Vomits. Robert in Australia, listen to the classics. One of my favorite lines from the BBC sci-fi comedy Red Dwarf, set 3 million years in the future. Rimmer to Lister. Why don't you listen to the classics? Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Motorhead. See, there is that thing. I mean, here's a guy who's supposed to have the perspective of millennia. And yet, it's Miley Cyrus that's going to bring the whole edifice collapsing, like, you know, like the columns coming down around a shorn Samson, you know? Randy with a great one-liner, Randy in PA. Perhaps I could help him out. Which way did he come in? Marty caught up with my Animal House reference. Every spring the toilets explode. I was about to make a National Lampoon's Animal House reference about this one sounding like a brown noser from the Omega House. It kind of begged, didn't it? Yeah, it did. So, light up the phones if you want. I've been kind of on an Al Stewart tear lately. This one just begs for a little something. And I'm going to do it, and then we're going to come back and go to the phones. 304-658-3333. I've had all I can stand of Victor Davis Hanson. I'm sure you have, too. Don't you love... Because every... Oh, my God! Really? A Jay-Z reference? An Obama phone reference? The unfounded allegation that someone has elided a $1 purse with a letter from Birmingham... What? little break and back. And you know, this kind of works with the whole Syria thing too. This is the Horn, the head-on radio network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Party hat and satin dress, the fur curled in a long black hair, tapping one small elegant shoe in time. Oh, the way she plays with him, smile at one and dance with another. Pretty soon they're forming up a line, and she's laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, the party draws them in. It breathes and moves to a life that's own. In its clouds, it's gathering all time. From the dark, he watches her moving in and out of the bobbing crowd. If she even notices, she gives no sign. And she's laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, laughing, laughing into 1939. For tonight is New Year's Eve. Uncork your spirits and welcome it in. Who knows what it's got up its sleeve? Can't wait for it all to begin. Stand by the girl with a purple balloon. Look in her eyes, just lights up the room. In the corner of her smile, she'll be seeing you soon. Under a mistletoe moon. Out onto the balcony come the king and queen, and the crowd go wild. He's a little bit nervous, but that's just fine. And they're laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, laughing, laughing into 1939.
Thanks for indulging me. It is straight up 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. That Laughing Into 1939 from the album of many years ago now, 18 years ago, by Al Stewart, called Between the Wars. You know, by the way, thanks for the observation in the chat room, guys. It was Larry who pointed out, does this guy realize his name is V.D. Hansen? A social disease? Pro. But, you know, it all boils down to this tired old crank moaning, O tempora, O mores, which comes from the opening speech against Catiline as uttered and written down by his slave. Cicero said that. And Cicero was another crank with a stick up his ass. Cicero was scared to death that if the popes, you know, the ordinary working people who carried Rome on their freaking backs, literally, were to get something more, you know, he was kind of a Milton Friedman for his age. He was afraid that if they had anything more than just the bare bread and oil to sustain them in their daily endeavors, that they might get all uppity and think that they deserve to have 8 or 10 freaking villas like Cicero had. And so, at the beginning of his speech against Catiline, Cicero, Marcus Tullius Cicero, says, O tempora, O mores, which is basically, O the times, O the customs. And he goes on in against Catiline to talk about the age of viciousness and meanness and rottenness in which he lived, and how all the goodness of the former years and the classics, and I don't think Milius Quirius appears anywhere in against De Catilina, but I don't know. But, well, you get the idea. What a jackass. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob.
What's happening, Bill?
Man, oh, man.
Did I summon you?
Oh, you must have. Where in the hell did they find this guy? And how did they pull him away from his job writing on men's room walls? Is this guy for real?
Yeah, really.
He was for real. Now, you sure he wasn't some kind of a...
No, this is not from The Onion, Bill.
No, okay. He reminds me of a book I had on the 50s. It was really good. Fred Allen, you know, because Fred was pretty funny on radio. He's very successful, and his career died with TV. And what Fred said about television would describe reading this guy's work. It's for something, for people with nothing to do, to read something by someone who can do nothing. I mean, I don't know, Bob, can you explain what kind of point this person was making?
Well, the point is the same point that was being made by the preachers in the pulpits in the 1940s and 50s who were inveighing against the imminent collapse of culture because of that race music.
Yeah.
Which you and I would recognize to be something altogether different than race music.
Race music, yeah.
Or you know, the people who warned the nation against the rapidly crumbling innocence of their virgin daughters on account of the swaying hips of that boy from Tupelo.
Exactly.
Or them kids from Liverpool with their long hair and their shaggy mop tops.
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't like every new thing that came along, but if somebody likes it, it's one thing to, like, I'm not.
But you see, there is a snide racist component to all this crap. And that was, you know, that was what really, really got me going. Because it's clear he's speaking about hip hop.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in its real form, not the commercialized BS that, you know, that pours out over the terrestrial airwaves now. In its original form was, you know, loaded with political content.
Yes, there was a pretty heavy message there.
And if this dumb bastard thinks that, I was deeply offended. You know, when he says we live in a psychodramatic age of virtual oppression and feigned want, you know.
Yeah, feigned want.
This,
virtual oppression. Yes.
Yeah, this dumb bastard needs to go back and listen to some of the origins of hip-hop.
Yeah.
And find out exactly what it is was being discussed.
Well, I just wonder how long it's going to take for this unemployment situation. I hope I'm long gone. But how long is it going to take to reach down and just keep grabbing people and throwing them into the wastebasket? As the money crowd keeps finding more and more ways to use less and less American people at a decent wage. And, of course, you know, the hell with them.
Did you happen to catch that story today about the acquisition? And I know this probably in most of our worlds this means next to nothing, but the acquisition of Nokia, once upon a time the world's largest cell phone manufacturer, by Microsoft.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and I heard it this morning when I was coming back from dropping Ferg off at school. And the fact that the CEO of Nokia, who is now going to be an employee of Microsoft, came to Nokia, oddly enough, from Microsoft, and lo and behold, a few years later, he's tanking Nokia into the Microsoft family. And I'm sitting, and so everybody that's a Microsoft worker everybody who was a Nokia worker in a Finnish company that theoretically tried to maybe do right by at least the people who were living in Finland,
yeah,
they're all going to be Microsoft employees now, and you know, F them.
Yeah, a lot of me is so cynical about everything, Bob, that I bother myself sometimes. That I've gotten this way. You know, remember, I started out life reading Oz books and, you know,
yeah,
such. And, man, I've gotten to be such a hard case when it comes to so much that goes on that, you know, I never thought I'd be looking for the exit door, you know. Understand what they, I mean, I heard some people today, we have to go in there and help Bashar Assad. Well, who's against him? Who's he running? Who's fighting with him? Well, I don't know, but, well, those first three words told me, well, I don't know. Since when?
But we have the assurances of Bomber John that they're good, you know, I mean, they're Muslims. But they're moderate Muslims. Up there with V.D. Hansen, that's my favorite, and his psychodramatic Age of Virtual Oppression. That's my favorite phrase of the night. They're Muslims, but they're moderate Muslims.
Yeah. Because, I mean, these revolutions...
I mean, we're daughters or anything.
These revolutions kick off all over the place, and, who was talking the other night about gas, natural gas? And how this would give a pipeline to Iran to get natural gas to the Mediterranean through Syria.
Yeah, I think that came up.
That's a possibility, because at least there, when you throw the word money, ability to make money, cash, all of a sudden that sheds some light on things, because those are the things that that mean more than I'll ever be able to understand, you know. Well, I'm not going to hold the line down tonight, but I'll leave you with a quote from you. You ever hear of, I'm sure you're hip to who Fred Allen was.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of his quotes about when he failed when TV came along.
Right.
And the quote, if I can remember, I can only get so close to the exact wording, but television was a thing for people with nothing to do to watch people who couldn't do much of anything. Or who could do nothing either.
Right, and you know, we can go back, and it was brilliantly parodied by Carol Burnett. You remember Gloria Swanson in what is it, Sunset Boulevard?
Yeah.
And when Carol Burnett parodied her, what she parodied was by making this really goofy mug at the camera and saying, "We had faces."
Yeah.
You know, we didn't. And you know, that's the complaint of the buggy whip manufacturer at the advent of the automobile. Yeah, but by God, you can't form a lasting relationship with the horsepower under your hood like you can with old Midnight that pulls your that hauls old Dobbin to the shay.
Man, I've had cars that I got that close to, that's for sure. When you, I never worked on a horse's innards, but I sure worked on. Everything a car had was something I've had to get in there and work on at some point in time and develop a screaming relationship with. I remember my first mother-in-law was talking to my my first wife and saying, does he have to talk when he has a wrench in his hand? Is that what's... And then her youngest son went to a diesel tech, and he's one of the best mechanics I ever saw in my life. And he talked the same way I did. You know, the blue air around you as you're working. But this guy, did they find this guy with a marking pen inside of washrooms?
I think he's the classics equivalent. I think he wanders through restrooms writing Sic Transit Gloria Mundi, 8675309.
You got it. That's about where, I mean, I'm not a...
Because does that mean that Gloria Mundi will make you sick?
Well, let me see. I got to look back in my book here. Yeah, that sounds like a perfect ticket to the old free clinic there. But I'm a sick dog. But I'm not a big fan of Cyrus Father either. I didn't think... He didn't begin to compare with some of the names we can pop out, you know, in that line of singing.
Oh, you know, a one-hit wonder is a one-hit wonder, whether it be country or pop or...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You name the music style and a one-hit wonder. And I guess she was an attractive kid. If you looked at kids, I stopped, you know, looking at them when I was that age. You know, I found out it was a lot.
Well, I always felt a little dirty old man-ish about that because, see, Hannah Montana was big at the same time that my youngest daughter was basically growing into puberty.
Yeah, so you saw plenty of her.
And she had a Hannah Montana wig and a Hannah Montana wireless microphone with a little Hannah Montana wireless speaker thing. And you know, the whole time I realized that Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus were not real human beings.
Exactly.
They were marketing vehicles for Disney. And see, that's one of the things that makes me crazy out of this whole thing, Bill, is that there is not a damned word of criticism for the, you know, for the human flesh merchant of Disney.
Yes.
You know, they're the ones that... look at their track record. Really?
Yep.
I mean, Lindsay Lohan? Yeah, there was a reference to Lindsay Lohan, but it wasn't referencing Disney. How's about Britney Spears?
Yes.
And I'm not complaining about whether there's any sexuality involved. I'm talking about what a mental train wreck they came out of the Disney brothel.
Yeah.
As what, you know, emotional train wreck, mental train wreck, psychological train wreck. They were worked like animals.
Yes.
And he complains that Miley Cyrus doesn't have a working appreciation of deadly dull Italian opera. Okay. When did he want her to get it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you know anything about the way that child stars are treated, you know, they have on-set tutors. And if we complain about children in ordinary schools being taught the test, what do you think the tutor is teaching, Bill? Nothing but the test.
You know, child labor laws
as they relate to child actors are a joke.
A hell of a long time.
I mean, how many Dana Platos do there have to be? You know, how many stories of, you know, the list goes on and on and on. But no, that doesn't come in for any criticism from this pretentious ass.
Well, I say, where the hell do they find him? You see any of his credits or any of his...
Oh yeah. Oh no. This guy's got a serious pedigree.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
His grandfather playing football, you know, or whoever the hell it was.
I mean, yeah. Well, his father and his uncle, or grandfather and granduncle, or whatever.
Played for Stag?
Yeah, played for at Pacific, at the University of the Pacific.
Oh my, that's a long time ago.
And he comes from a family of raisin farmers in the San Joaquin Valley. Now, how many migrant workers you reckon have been abused?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you'll notice the snide commentary he had for Depression-era art.
Yes.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind in that, of course, is things like Of Mice and Men and The Grapes of Wrath.
Yes.
And I'm sure that I'm sure he does not write. He does not think approvingly of either.
I just wonder what, I mean, you talk about how far backwards do they want their supporters to go in world history or social history? Well, I mean, we're, you know, are we going backwards to the days of the dinosaur or what?
Well, you know, that they all yearn for that to that mythical time when the morals were good and pure, the age was golden, the women were virginal, the men were upright and virtuous. In other words, a time that has never, ever existed.
Yes.
And yet they think, you know, when something like this gets penned, the rubes that read the National Review online, well, see, this is why we're looking. Look at how smart he is. No, this guy's a military historian.
He is?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear some of that.
Well, I mean, you may have read his thing. He got big kudos, Bill, for his book. Where is it? He's a commentator on modern warfare and politics for the National Review. He's a former professor of classics at Cal State University, Fresno. He's the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution.
Well, Hoover Institute, yes, okay. Anybody who still supports President Hoover's handling of depression belongs in an institution.
Man, ba-dum-bum. He's received the National Humanities Medal. He has received the Claremont Institute Statesmanship Award at its annual Churchill Dinner. He's received the $250,000 Bradley Prize from the Lindy and Hay Foundation.
God.
He's a grape farmer. And let's see, his mother was a lawyer. I mean, talk about privilege. His mother was a lawyer and a judge, and his father was an educator and college administrator. His father and uncle played college football at the College of the Pacific under Amos Alonzo Stagg.
I may agree with only one part of what he said. There are businesses in this country who will hustle anything and anybody if the price is right.
Well, sure. I mean, why do you think there are 152 million cable channels now? Why do you think there are shows like Hatfield's and McCoy's White Lightning? Why do you think we have Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Child?
Where the hell did they find that situation? God almighty.
Well, they don't find it. They make it up.
Yes.
I mean, it amazes me that in 1997, when we were sitting in dumbstruck horror looking at the story of JonBenet Ramsey out in Colorado, remember her?
Oh, yes.
That, lo and behold, within 10 years, one of these godforsaken cable channels would say, hey, you remember that little pageant queen that got slaughtered? Don't we make a program about little girls being put through the meat grinder of the baby beauty pageant circuit, and we'll call it Toddlers and Tiaras, and out of that emerges Honey Boo Boo Child.
I mean, there's a certain amount of truth to what these child things can do to kids. You know, these beauty pageants and such for kids that are too young to even understand what they had for lunch yesterday.
I was looking for the name of the book. I mentioned it earlier. You may have run across this somewhere in your readings, Bill.
No.
It's called Carnage and Culture.
God almighty.
And no, it's a 2001 book in which he argues that, like I said before, that Frisbees and Wheat Chex were delivered by Western civilization at the point of the spear or the muzzle of a gun, beginning with the ancient Greeks. In his book, he makes the argument that everything that's good that has come to the world has come from the West, including political freedom, capitalism, individualism, democracy, scientific inquiry, rationalism, and open debate.
Well, how about chess and algebra? Where did they come from again?
We're leaving that out.
Pasta come from the Far East.
Well,
just made out of rice instead of semolina.
Yeah, yeah, good.
Yeah, I've got one.
The Polo Boys.
Pardon?
The Polo Boys. You know, Marco's daddy and his brother.
Yeah. I've got a book in the news now, basically really covers the aftermath of World War II in Europe, and what an ungodly mess. I mean, it was, thank somebody that the shooting stopped, but the mess, I give the Europeans a lot of credit in more ways than I give us.
You know, see, this clown, among other things, will not admit that things like geography or environment,
yep,
or ethnicity, no, none of this has to. This explains why it is that white Europeans have been among the most bloodthirsty people on the face of the planet for the last 500 years.
Well, we should.
It's because we're smarter.
Had our turn at the barrel. There's no doubt about that.
Well, the funny thing is, he was a big supporter of the Iraq War, and he said, "What was this?" I mean, I loved it the first time I read it. He said the Iraq War was, on the whole, a laudable success.
Well, my God, it sure as hell should have been, shouldn't it? Because I didn't see any, I've not been able to get my hands on anything on the Iran-Iraq War. But you talk about a bloodbath. World War II tactics with modern, ultra-modern weapons.
Sure. And that was a classic case of a war waged on the old premise of, come on, let's you and him fight.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the first people to use poison gas were my people, German people. They turned that stuff loose in 1916. And the English retaliated, of course, in French immediately. And we got, somehow we got smart. Although there was times when things were pumped into the caves on Iwo and Malinta Tunnel, which is this huge tunnel on Corregidor. And the Japanese were holed up in it, and the Americans just blew it up, blew the hill up. And there was a concrete fort in the bay that they called a concrete battleship, but it had 14-inch, you know, seacoast guns on it, you know, naval guns. And the Japanese, we pumped it full of gasoline and lit it up, you know. So everybody sure can take their credit, the leadership. Or who was the chief of staff of the American Army? A guy that I liked an awful lot, Virginian by birth, Marshall.
Yeah.
Because the Marshall Plan was a pretty decent piece of work, wasn't it?
And you could argue that it was deeply humane.
Yes. But, you know, his opinion after the dropping of the first atomic bomb out of ignorance, that we should drop these on Honshu and any islands we had to go in to root out the Japanese army. And then the American soldiers could, you know, march in there and all the Japanese would be dead. Yeah, march right across that beach where they dropped radioactive bombs.
Yeah, yeah, that'll work out great.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll let you go, but my God, I've got to see if I have any old humor records around here after that. It does frighten me. Once in a while, I'll pick up a book written by somebody that is just so out of date. I mean, most historians are downright, they'll paint both sides of the picture. This guy did this guy did that, and you start throwing them up against the wall, and what either side did sticks. There's times when you're involved in that shit that anything can happen.
And see, the thing that drives me even nuttier about this character is that he makes an argument that I have made. I think there is real value in teaching the classics to school children as they have been taught to school children for the last, you know.
Well, Bob, us old farts.
You know, a little Latin, a little Greek, learning how to speak publicly, learning how to formulate a rational argument, that really did. You know, that led to things like the scientific method. It led to the Renaissance, the rediscovery of the works of Greek and Roman authors was very important in the rise of the so-called modernism, beginning with the Renaissance. It's very important. But when I see a miserable old stick in the mud like this, make my argument the same argument I'm making. But the thing is, he says that we need to return to classics education because knowledge of the classical Greeks and Romans is necessary. Well, here's the quote.
The answer to why the world is becoming westernized goes all the way back to the wisdom of the Greeks. Reason enough why we must not abandon the study of our heritage.
Heritage?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that his name was Hansenopoulos.
Yeah. Because we don't teach enough. My buddy taught history in Lake County, and in fact, he taught the kids that were relations to the guy who quit, dropped out representatives out there. Because he couldn't deal with any more of this new breed of Republican. Because he was a Republican.
Yeah. But this guy's a registered Democrat, but he lets that serve as cover for running over and supporting the wholesale slaughter of people who really didn't do anything to deserve it.
Well, there's so much of that. We have a bad lesson to look at, and that was the rise of Adolf and how he should have been stepped down a lot earlier.
And once again, in both he, but more importantly, Mussolini, you have an example of somebody who wanted to return to classical culture. You know,
yes.
Here's Benito Mussolini, who has bears no relation whatsoever to anything to do with classical antiquity, but he styles himself a new Caesar.
Yeah.
And yeah, we kind of have him to thank for the fact that you can go and pay a few euros to get to walk through the ruins of the Forum, or that some other things have been uncovered along the way. But he had a completely twisted understanding of the, and the same thing goes for Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't know enough about Stalin to know whether he was classically influenced or not. But I'm gonna have to go back and rethink I think it's always beneficial for young people to learn languages, and I think learning Latin is something that really opens a lot of doors because it makes French, Spanish, Romanian, Italian, to a certain extent German, easier.
It's the mother of a lot of European languages.
Right, just like studying ancient Greek makes Russian easier.
Yeah, I took some Latin, and I did not do well at it. I was so out of touch, and so, I don't know, I just got to a point where I really early in my life, I began to hate the establishment. Maybe it's when you're poor. Maybe if you spent 4 years in a place that it wasn't a prison, believe me. But they were trying to raise you like it was 1930. And when I stepped out into the world in my teens, there was a door revolving at a high speed. And I took one step into it and haven't got out of it yet. Because, I mean, Bob, it was just a time and a place when you're, when you're 21 like I was, my God, you know, 43 and 21 is what, 64?
Yes.
It's a funny time.
You're asking the wrong guy for math on the fly, but yes.
Yeah, it's a funny time because I came out of a housing project, neighborhood, and people would never know it unless I told them. Or unless they saw me behave in a bar where some drunk knocked my PA amp over for the third time, and I came off stage and knocked him halfway across the room, picked him up and knocked him back again and got back on stage. Because you are where you come from, and, you know, if you live in, well, I'm sure I, because, Bob, I had a lot of young friends from West by God. So these boys were pretty tough cookies.
Well, yeah, and they are when they're not overcome by the stupid and doing 90 miles an hour up a two-lane road.
Well, I had a nice Nova. We dropped a 327 in, and I'm 36 years old, drag racing at 3 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't afford to do it when I was 18.
Yeah, but when you're doing it 2 o'clock in the afternoon in regular daily traffic.
Oh, yeah, we got away with it because it's middle of the night, and one time I'm tearing down Euclid going east. I was already east of the clinic when I was running with some guy, and some car came out in front of me, and, man, I had to jump back off that gas pedal and get behind the guy I was racing. I had visions of, get this shovel and get this little fat guy off the road, will you? He's blocking the road. I'll let you go, but that, I mean, I don't know what's going on anymore. The whole thing almost sounded like a satire.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you were giving it a good push. I take my word for it. Your language was perfect, Bob. Your inflections were very good.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you,
John. You were right there with the timing, but I thought to myself, my God, half the people in this country couldn't understand what he was saying.
Well, you know, I just got this notion of him sitting in the audience trying to listen to some blues and lamenting, whatever became of the minuets?
Yeah, it's like, what the hell? What the hell, Eric?
What was wrong with the Virginia reel?
Well, I've reeled.
You know, it ain't got no beat and you can't dance to it.
Yeah, I've reeled, but I almost fell down when I did it. You know, it was really...
I've done some reeling of my own, but there was usually a little bit of chemical inspiration.
Well, you know, that's the way it was. I was in the projects hanging out with a couple Korean War veterans, and they're all drinking Thunderbird, and they say, let the kid have one every fourth trip through. And my favorite thing, I'll let you go with this one, my favorite thing was watching the guys uncork the bottle, unscrew the cap, take the heel of their hand and wipe the top of the bottle off. Well, that's sterilization if I ever saw it. That'll clean it right up from it.
Well, hell's bells, if it can live in Thunderbird.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you can clean needles with Thunderbird.
But I heard these guys talk, a couple of Korean vets, and I got an education without having to be there. They were pretty plain. When the more they drank, the more they would open up. Some of it was hilarious, and some of it was horrible. Anyway, I'll let you go.
All right, you have a good night.
Take care.
Take care, Bill. Mr. Stress calling from Cleveland, and we roll onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
And how are you tonight?
I don't know. I mean, Jim, you know, apparently we're living in the middle of the collapse of civilization.
Oh, well, possibly. You know, I could tune in late tonight. As a matter of fact, I did tune in, and then all of a sudden, I think there's a tsetse fly in here somewhere, but I was listening to Al Stewart in the 1939.
Well, you missed what was in the middle of it then, so you're probably among the more fortunate of those listening to the horn this evening.
Well, there are a lot of bad things going on in the world and have gone on in the world, and there will continue to go on in the world, that's for sure. But when you, 1939 for you has always been a sort of a fascinating year for me. I wasn't even born then. But right now I'm looking at a souvenir from a 1939 World's Fair in New York.
Oh my.
Uh-huh. There's a poster, The World of Tomorrow. There's the Trilon, the Paris Fair. And there are all kinds of knickknacks that my mother brought back from that fair. And when you look at that fair and the world of tomorrow and what could, you know, who would have known, basically, that...
The world of tomorrow didn't quite play out as advertised, did it?
Not really, no. It did not, actually. There's a film called Glorious 39. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
No.
But it's about Great Britain and their preparations for the war and stuff like that. And there's a significant part of that film that's devoted to what people had to do with their animals, had them put to sleep.
Oh, jeez.
Because there would be no way to resource or feed these animals. And they were all, you know, people were taking their cats and dogs and taking them to the vet to be euthanized. And then, of course, the vet would put a big pile up and throw some gasoline on them and set them on fire. Not exactly a good movie to watch, because when I first saw it, and I said, Glorious 39, you know, my interesting year, fascinating year for me as far as history is concerned, but when I saw that, I just had to disengage from the film. I didn't care to see.
Well, Jim, you know, I was thinking of you this weekend when more than one individual hollered, Munich, Munich, Munich.
Yeah, I heard some of that, too. I heard Munich and
you know, to compare the idea of not bombing Syria with Munich is a grave dishonor.
Well, there were also references made to the St. Louis too, and how we turned that ship away.
But you know, no one has made plainer on this program than you, Jim, the horrors that were manifest in that era.
Well, that's true.
And for these people who are so desirous of war, to equate not bombing brown people in Syria with the giving away of Czechoslovakia to the Third Reich, absolutely minimizes all the horrors and all the sacrifices that attended all those years.
Well, they're just
because Bashar al-Assad is not Adolf Hitler. Hell, he's not even Benito Mussolini.
Well, no, he's not. And
he's just another punk-ass thug who operates on you know, the authoritarian model of governance in an area and a region that has really never known any other kind of governance, even going all the way back to the Persians.
Well, I accept him as a fait accompli, and I realize that he's done some things that are not very that they're in contravention to a number of things.
Well, and poor old Rand Paul can't decide which way he wants to fall on this issue.
I agree with Rand Paul, basically, that, you know, they need bring this before the American Congress and have them, you know, at least legally tell the president whether or not he should exercise his authority as commander-in-chief. And I'm really scared of what's going to happen over there. And I heard General Dempsey talk limited war and this, that, and the other. And as I sent to you an email earlier this afternoon, well, the idea of fighting a limited war is like putting a bottle of scotch in front of an alcoholic.
Right, and saying only shot.
That was a quotation of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Who said that? But nonetheless, you know, that's going to be a dangerous situation. And I don't see how they can limit it because.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, Sandra tweeted early on that the authorization for use of military force that President Obama wants is nothing of the sort. He wants authorization for ground troops or. Pretty much, well, I mean, he wants a one-size-fits-all authorization for use of military force.
The language of the law states in that the president can do anything that he considers necessary, and though these aren't the exact words, but basically it's giving carte blanche and the phrase necessary and proper to do anything.
Right, and frankly, under the War Powers Act, under the War Powers Act, the president can go to war and then has a time frame in which he has to go to Congress to continue it. What is it, no more than 60 days?
Yeah, but the trouble is, after 60 days, once you get into something like that, you might not be able to stop it.
And that, but I mean, that is the nature of the law that is at work here.
Well, I don't think 60 days are going to work here because when you go to war, you go to war. And at least that's my definition of it.
But the Obama administration repeatedly said, Jim, you know, we just want to lob a few cruise missiles in.
It's not, no. That's not going to work. Generals tell you and this, that, and the other, they don't know what the outcome is going to be. There's no way that they can predict what other nations will and what will follow as far as their reactions to the initial, what do you want to call it, the casus belli, casus fideris. But nonetheless, there's no way they can predict the outcome. I mean, you're virtually entering into a darkened room with the issue of sleepwalk.
Yeah.
You know who quoted that one?
No.
That's straight from Adolf Hitler.
Ooh, but true.
That's what he said. Yes, he said, I basically conduct my affairs with the assurance of a sleepwalker. And, of course, you know, going back to 1939, things were going pretty well with him. He had a great birthday party for April 30th. You can see it online if you want to. And who would have thought that, you know, within 6 years, all that beautiful city in which he had that birthday party will be nothing but ruins. And that 50 million people would be dead.
Wow. I don't see any good coming out of this business.
Well, I don't either. I'm not really interested in lobbing cruise missiles into places where they don't need to be. And we have had such a bad experience with the two wars that we've recently fought, or still fighting, really, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they've cost us so much in terms of blood and treasure, and they've cost us, the other people in these countries. I mean, they'll never be the same again. There's just no way. And I think you better think twice before thinking you can just send a few surgically designed instruments into a situation without realizing the consequences. I mean, it's kind of like taking a knife and sticking it into a person's head and giving them a lobotomy. You don't know what's going to happen to that person after you do that, and they call that surgical precision. And I hope that, you know, the analogy isn't lost on you, but I'm sure it's not. But it's not a good thing. I would like to see this thing taken before the United Nations, and I would like to see Assad taken to the world court.
See, that's if you're, and that's in line with my thesis on this, Jim. If your casus belli is the use of chemical weapons, then the goal of any military action based upon the usage of those chemical weapons should be to secure the body, and preferably the living body, of the person who ordered the use of the chemical weapons, transportation to The Hague, and a trial. And if found guilty, a lifetime of imprisonment in somewhere not very nice.
Well, the trouble is, when you think of what it's going to take to do that, because he's not going to go willingly. He's just not.
No.
And you've got so many other factions over there. I can't keep them all straight. I mean, you know, you hear one version of who's allied with whom.
No, that's why we have to depend on Bomber John McCain to tell us that, no, they're good. They're good Muslims, really. I mean, you know, they're Muslims, but they're moderate Muslims. That's, like I said, that's my favorite phrase of the night. They're Muslims, but they're moderate Muslims.
Well, I don't know. Assad has been in power how long over there?
Since his daddy died.
Well, unfortunately, it's just another situation in which, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the proof that he has used chemical weapons and he has killed a number of people, literally committed these acts against humanity. But he's not without friends. And he has Russia, North Korea, Iran, a number of nations there that are simply hope that we do not, even if it means we can't bring him to justice or whatever, we, in my humble opinion, are going to start something over which we will not have any control, and the 60 days will make no difference. Because it's already started. And once you start something like that, you're off. Not until you pull the final switch on it. It's very frightening to me. This is one of the more frightening things that's happened recently. I mean, when we went into Iraq, of course, that was a... Oh, boy, that was a mess. And, of course, you know, you had shock and awe, and that was supposed to do this, that, and the other. And what have we created in Iraq? A nation state that can't even take care of itself right now, basically. It's just hanging on by a thread. And then, of course, when we went into Afghanistan, those people over there have done nothing but war, and they don't care if it continues. I mean, they run the Russians whenever, 1980, whenever they left. I know they went in 79, so I think they were there 10 years. It didn't do them a whole lot of good down, did it?
Nope, not much.
No, when you keep going into these little countries in which you have these factions and things like that, and there are so many other players in this thing, and the Israelis are not going to sit back and let them do anything. I mean, it's almost, I would stake my life on the fact that Israel will react and will react accordingly against whomever it deems actions that are appropriate for the sake of Israel. If we start something over there like, if we just basically... Wars are strange things. I mean, World War II, it started with the German invasion of Poland, and of course the reason given for that was the fact that a radio station had been taken over by the Poles, and
of course
it was Operation Canned Goods, and Heydrich and Himmler were big with that, and they put prisoners from concentration camps into Polish uniforms. And then, of course, the previous summer of 1939, the German theaters had been filled with all these things about the atrocious activities of the Poles against the Germans, all the while building towards September. And, of course, September 39, 1939, guess what the theme of the 1939 rally would be? Would have been at Nuremberg.
What?
It was going to be the party rally of peace. And all the while, Hitler was spending that summer at the Berghof and his mountain retreat planning what he was going to do with Poland, and he did what he did and was looking for a way to hopefully get away with another one. But it just didn't work because the British and the French said no, not no, but you know,
hell no.
And of course, you know, I think German ambassadors were all everywhere assuring people of 39 that the Fuhrer was a man of peace, and you could make book on his promises, which they knew wasn't true. And he wasn't a man of peace. He was a man who was determined to find living space in the East, and Poland was the first victim over the corridor leading into Danzig. And then, of course, you see how it just multiplied into a absolute world war from September 1st at 4:45 in the morning until September 3rd at 11 o'clock when the respective nations in Berlin handed Ribbentrop a note saying that
a state of war existed.
A state of war existed between Germany and Great Britain and France, and Hitler had his war. And for a while there, it went pretty well for him. But then again, it didn't turn out so well for him at all. I just don't think wars turn out very well for anyone, actually. When they have to be fought, well, I guess you have to fight them. We had to fight World War II, and we couldn't let Hitler and Mussolini continue with their incursions into different parts of the world and just take things away from people that didn't belong to them. And to, but it's gotten so much more, you know, it's gotten, in this part of the world, over there, there's so much dissension and so much unrest, and there's so much bad history there among the real one when we drag into this thing. That's what I'm trying to say. And I'm concerned mainly.
Sure, I mean, you would assume that the geniuses at the Pentagon have figured out that there are several different alternatives whereby one reaches the state of ungrace called There Goes the Neighborhood.
Well, there are people at the Pentagon who are, number one, they're very pissed off about the cost of the sequester. And this is one way, in their estimation, that they can get their budget back and, you know, make themselves, you know, not be affected by the sequester, and they can basically have a school of thought that supports that tremendously, and they wouldn't care. I mean, these guys are ready to go. Of course, the ones who are ready to go are not the ones who are going to have to go there and fight it, or the ones who are going to be the receiving end of these missiles. But, you know, it's real easy to just say, okay, go ahead and let it rip, and it'll basically give us a lot of career promotion opportunities and things of that nature, because they exist for one purpose, and one person only, and that is the prosecution of war, whether it's for defense or whatever. And now, you know, now they, I think Dempsey was originally against it, and now he has turned into this business of tying it to our national security to lob these missiles into Syria. Now, I'm not a four-star general, and I've worked for some, and I know how they think, but I just can't see much connection between sending missiles into Syria without really. And if you do this, you are going to threaten our national security. That's exactly the way I see it. They say if we don't do it, our national security will. If you do it, and there are a number of people who agree with me, I like 50% of the American people, push comes to shove and say, we don't want this. If you do start something over there or escalate it, it will. If you want a threat to our national security, you've got it. And that's the way I see it.
And it will be a self-inflicted threat, will it not?
Well, I would think so, yes. They all always are. Just an example. For example, the reasons for taking over in 1939 in Poland, that was a self-inflicted, that turned out to be a self-inflicted threat, if ever one did. 41, when Hitler invaded Russia, well, that,
yeah, that, or as
that
we
was
would,
a real self-inflicted threat.
Yeah, to use a valuable sports metaphor in this instance, Jim, that's an unforced error.
Well, they paid dearly for it, that's for damn sure.
And in the midst of all of this, of course, I began the program with audio of John McCain being a serious foreign policy specialist who only wants to be loved.
Yeah, I heard part of that.
Yeah, pontificating, and, you know, they're Muslims, but they're moderate Muslims, blah, 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 blah. So there was this really very serious hearing in the Senate today, right?
Extremely serious.
Okay, guess what? Guess what the most serious foreign policy expert in the United States Senate spent his time doing? And I mean Bomber John McCain.
Well, he was advocating going ahead and, you know, basically.
No. I'm talking about when he's not talking. When, you know, when you're a senator full of dignitas and gravitas and you're the respected foreign policy leader of your party in the Senate and blah, 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 blah.
I heard him, but I couldn't see him, really. What was he doing, sleeping?
No. He was playing online Texas Hold'em poker with his iPhone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. I was watching, Senator Kerry and the other people who were,
Now, the right wing is out there, and understand, I don't support any kind of stupid warfare in Syria, whether it's being done by a Republican or a Democrat. I'm a man of peace. So I don't support the president launching cruise missiles at brown people. I also don't support John McCain's desire to have a much wider war that kills brown people with much more various means.
Well, I don't want cruise missiles launched at white people.
Right.
It has to be brown, white, yellow, no, but yellow, I mean, black, and white. I don't give a shit about that.
Right. I understand, Jim, but the point is it's brown people at this point in time, just like it was in Iraq. But anyway, so the right wing is having a hissy because over the weekend, Matt Drudge published a photo on his tawdry little website of Barack Obama foot on the Oval Office desk. The Republic is falling. Right? Meanwhile, John McCain is out there playing online Texas Hold'em poker and trying to figure out whether to call or raise or check.
Well, it's just amazing what these people do to pass the time when very serious events are occurring. Now, tomorrow is going to be the day when they have the classified closed section of those hearings. Now, that's going to be a real barn burner.
And when he was inquired of as to why he was doing this, he said, as much as I always listen with rapt attention, see, he's a smartass, constantly to remarks of my colleagues over a 3.5-hour period, occasionally I get a little bored, and so I resorted, but the worst thing about it is I lost thousands of dollars in this game. Of course, it was only.
Oh, well.
So the fate of hundreds, if not thousands of people, hangs in the balance while the guy who considers himself the foreign policy guru of his party is wondering whether his pocket trays will hold up against the... Jeez. Hey, Jim, I got to get out of here. Good conversation.
Okay. Good night.
Bye now. Jim calling from not far from here. Hey, we're done. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Hope you'll join in. And thanks, everybody, for getting us over Raising Goal and for helping us. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. And most of all, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACAC.org. Rick Smith is next on the horn. Bye, y'all.